Spotify is not secretive about its SRE practices, but there's so much information. I've done the hard work and distilled the insights for you. Listen on for more details. In this episode of Site Reliability Executive, I will take you on a journey through Spotify's SRE practice. We'll start our trip with a walk down memory lane, exploring how Spotify's SRE practice started. Then we'll deep dive into how SRE supports the broader engineering culture. And finally, I will share with you inside details of the SRE culture at the world's most popular audio streaming service. This is a limited audio series to educate organizations going through digital transformation to SRE. I'm Ash Patel, and this is an SRE Path production. Have you caught wind of the latest binge-worthy Netflix series, The Playlist, the one loosely inspired by the birth of Spotify? There's a chance you've already seen it. Maybe you've even binge-watched all 6 episodes. I recently got around to it myself, and let me tell you, it was worth the watch. So picture this. I'm innocently scrolling through YouTube looking for cool new insights on SRE, as one does. Then an ad pops up, teasing an intriguing tale about the inner workings of Spotify's software operations. I'm hooked instantly. I mean, who wouldn't be? I already knew that the early success of Spotify hinged on the wizardry of its server operations, and that's just scratching the surface. I've been wondering for a while what Spotify's site reliability engineering practices would be like. Spoiler alert, they're absolutely amazing. Get ready for a journey as we unravel the intricate web of Spotify's SRE practice. Now hold on tight, because we're about to go into the rabbit hole. Let's do a quick rundown of the history of SRE at Spotify. What was it like before SRE came in at Spotify? The magic of server-side work was part of Spotify's early charm. The Netflix series showed Daniel Ek, CEO of Spotify, challenging the former CTO Andreas N to make Spotify fast with a song load time of less than 200 milliseconds. Sub 200 milliseconds is the load time that is perceivable by the human ear as instantaneous. Remember, this was in 2006 when internet capabilities were not as good as they are now, and getting sub-second latency was a challenge. In fact, it was considered by most engineers to be impossible. To achieve this trick, the engineers at Spotify created a hybrid fetch model. This approach predicted what the user would want to listen to next and pre-fetched it through the peer-to-peer network. This decreased server load by 90%. For the remaining 10% of the time, the search went to the servers to play songs that were related to the song that was already in play. Client-level caching and prefetching songs 30 seconds before changeover also helped optimize playback and achieve a latency of 245 milliseconds. Not bad. But this server sorcery proved not to be enough to support future growth. In a way, SRE was a response to this hypergrowth. In 2011, Spotify faced inevitable challenges of growth, where monthly users more than doubled around that time, from approximately 3 million users in 2010 to over 7.4 million users in 2011. This fast expansion led to the quick development of supporting infrastructure, which in turn increased the underlying complexity of the infrastructure. Growing complexity constantly challenged the reliability and scalability of the system. To tackle this challenge, Spotify officially introduced Site Reliability Engineering, a strategic move that was brought in to combat their growing pains and conquer any obstacles that lay ahead. It was a pivotal moment, as Spotify's software and production was on the cusp of reaching hyperscale proportions. The stage was set for an audacious leap into uncharted territory. Spotify was inspired by Google's success with Site Reliability Engineering, which were developed by VP of Engineering at Google, Ben Trainer. Spotify's engineering leaders aimed to adopt a similar approach, but one that was tailored to its unique challenges. As Spotify's user base and infrastructure continued to grow, the company scaled its SRE practices accordingly. Scaling SRE practices at Spotify included expanding the size and scope of SRE teams, introducing more sophisticated practices like observability and internal developer platforms, and investing in building more scalable and reliable infrastructure. Of course, they consistently invested in building more scalable and reliable infrastructure. You might be wondering, how has SRE actually helped Spotify's tech work? The first thing is that Spotify SREs have automated a lot of the work, which means they've cut a lot of the repetitive work that went on. You could say the automation practices devised by Spotify's SREs have proved to be a godsend for developers and product teams alike. By relieving developers of the tiresome burden of manual and repetitive tasks, these automations allow them to channel their energy into the craftsmanship of feature design and higher quality code. Sounds good, doesn't it? The result? A surge in productivity that paved the way for the efficient delivery of code that didn't compromise on quality. The other thing that SREs did for Spotify's tech work was increase DevOps practices adoption. The SREs at Spotify excel in collaborating with software engineers. They have an ability to integrate reliability and operational considerations into the developer workflow. By doing this, they're enabling developers to gain a deep understanding of the operational aspects of their code, and so encouraging them to write more reliable and resilient code from the outset. Part of this effort includes a regular measurement and monitoring of services and system performance. This way, SREs can give developers valuable insights into the behavior and performance of their applications. You might be wondering, what can developers do from all this behavioral and performance information? By leveraging metrics and monitoring, developers can proactively identify bottlenecks within their services. They can use this to optimize their code's performance, and overall, they get to enhance the user experience of their applications. Here's one thing that SREs are actually quite well known for, and that's incident response. They support developers in the process of responding to incidents. So both are actually involved in the process. When you ask the question of who goes in first, though, SREs take the lead at Spotify and are the first responders. There are several good reasons for this, because SREs have the necessary tools, training, and knowledge to diagnose and mitigate system-wide issues, if that's what they are. They can follow well-defined incident management processes, and they already have on-call rotations to ensure 24/7 coverage. SREs leverage their specialized expertise in system reliability to make all this work effectively. Of course, I'm not going to negate the impact that developers have in incident response. Developers are active contributors when incidents occur at Spotify. This, of course, depends on the nature and severity of the incident. Developers may be called in to provide their expertise in understanding the code base and identifying potential root causes to resolve the issue as fast and as effectively as possible. Essentially, developers are closely collaborating with SREs to investigate the incident, analyze relevant logs, metrics, system behavior, the code, and then contribute to resolving the issue. It's a truly unified effort where both parties bring their strengths to the table. Both parties also are involved in post-incident retrospectives, also known in Google's SRE nomenclature as postmortems. Postmortems involve a broad group of stakeholders. These postmortems provide an opportunity for developers to contribute their insights, share the lessons that they've learned, and collectively work together to prevent similar incidents occurring in the future, or at least reduce the severity of future incidents. By participating in incident response and postmortem processes, developers are gaining a deeper understanding of system failures and root causes. It allows them to make informed design decisions and also implement preventative measures throughout. This combined effort between SREs and developers allows for a more effective response to creating reliable and robust software. Now, you may be wondering, what is Spotify's culture like to make all of this happen? At Spotify, everyone cares about reliability. Like I mentioned before, developers are involved in the process too. Spotify has cultivated a culture of reliability engineering that permeates every nook and cranny of the organization. So a lot of its engineers, if not all, are thinking about reliability, they prioritize it, and they're thinking ahead about system resilience when they're working on their features and services. It also gives them ownership of operational aspects of the service. So I mentioned before about how this culture manifests. It starts off with actually involving the developers in the process of responding to incidents and going through retrospectives. I cannot emphasize this enough, that the culture is about involving people, because that's how they actually start to care about the work that you're trying to do. So for any SRE listening out there, if you can find a way to get developers baked into your workflows, or baking in reliability into their workflows, that's a more effective way to drive better outcomes for software reliability. Of course, there's more to developing a culture like this, and this is where I think Spotify went really well with their Spotify model. They enable the spread of SRE more effectively through this model, and I'm going to explain how. So in true Spotify fashion, where they not only revolutionized how music is consumed, they even revolutionized organizational structures. This is what I'm alluding to when I say the Spotify model. SREs are embedded within cross-functional product development teams known as squads, but they are also part of communities of practice known as guilds. The Spotify model has created quite a buzz in the last 5 or so years, and it's something that permeates a lot of conversations that I have with agile practitioners. A lot of them will bring up lingo like squads, tribes, chapters, and guilds. Here's the interesting thing. Spotify's model has gone well beyond tech-native companies. It's spread to domains I never would have thought would have been interested, like supermarket chains, retailers, and believe it or not, even banks. It's a testament to the far-reaching impact of Spotify's innovative practices, not just innovative technology. Of course, every decent model that has gained popularity has its detractors, but I doubt it's going to do anything to the model because it's well-baked into the culture of a lot of agile teams. I'm going to quickly go through what each of these various facets of the Spotify model is, so that we can then go into where SRE fits into all of it. We start off with squads. Squads are generally cross-functional teams consisting of individuals with different skills who are working together for a specific objective. They have the right to make their own decisions as long as they're aligning their roadmap with the company's vision. An example of a squad at Spotify would be a recommendation algorithm squad, which is specifically focused on developing and optimizing algorithms. Where would this recommendation algorithm team fit in? They would fit into a tribe. A tribe is a group of several squads who've come together, working toward a common mission, which promotes alignment and collaboration. The example I mentioned earlier of a recommendation algorithm squad would fit into the discovery tribe, which is focused on the broader mandate of enhancing music discovery and recommendations. How would some of the people in this squad and tribe actually develop their expertise? They can be part of a chapter. A chapter can be individuals with similar skills gathering to share knowledge and develop their expertise. The example that would be most relevant to this one would be machine learning and data science, which is focused on enhancing work with data and algorithms. Now, this is where we come in and find where SREs fit in, or where even the practice of SRE gets pollinated across Spotify. SRE is considered a guild within Spotify. It actually spans across squads and tribes and chapters and allows for knowledge and creativity to flow freely, resulting in breakthrough ideas and cross-pollination of these ideas. Site reliability engineering is an example guild, and the whole idea behind it is to focus on increasing the reliability of services across the organization. So to sum it up, SRE as a guild within Spotify spans across multiple cross-functional teams, which are known as squads, as well as collectives of value-streamed aligned teams, which can be tribes. I have a strong opinion on this, and I have to say that this is probably the reason why that SRE was so effectively seeded throughout the organization of Spotify. It allowed for close collaboration between SREs and other technologists who had an interest in reliability. Spotify's engineers built its own internal developer platform. It's called Backstage, and few tools are as public a testament to Spotify's engineer-first culture as this. Backstage plays a crucial role in fostering Spotify's engineering culture. It promotes developer autonomy, and as a result, it allows for end-to-end service ownership. Wait, did I just say Backstage helps developer autonomy? Yeah, it actually does. Through it, Spotify engineers can just help themselves and support their services. They also gain access to knowledge sharing. In terms of what the engineer can do inside it, they can contribute to shared libraries, access shared libraries, they can access monitoring and deployment tooling, they can write and document best practices, access best practices, and they can exchange ideas around improvements. The benefits of this include reducing duplication of efforts. Imagine multiple engineers going out there and trying to do the same thing when really all you need is a platform that allows them to access all of the learnings from what engineers have done in the past. It also helps them accelerate the onboarding of new team members. The other thing is it promotes increased cross-team collaboration on improving. It also helps actually make improvements public so that people can actually work through and find ways to improve services and how they're actually serviced and maintained. Overall, this means that engineers have now got the increased ability to experiment, innovate, and iterate on projects without reinventing the wheel. There is one aspect of Backstage that is quite fascinating to me in particular, and that is the concept of golden parts. Backstage incorporates the concept of golden parts as a way to provide streamlined and standardized processes for developers. They're predefined and recommended paths that developers can take to drive them through necessary steps and practices for common tasks and common workflows. In essence, I'm referring to golden paths as a easier way to say predefined templates, workflows, and guidelines that help developers follow proven practices and not reinvent the wheel. I'm going to keep saying reinvent the wheel because I think it's very important that developers not do this. Golden paths can be involved in many points of the software development lifecycle, such as creating new services, deploying them, and then setting up the monitoring and alerting for them. Of course, there are organizational benefits of doing this too. You reduce the time that an engineer is spending working on configurations when they can just leverage pre-configured and tested configurations. It also allows you to align engineers more effectively to the organization's engineering standards. Most importantly, in my opinion, because I'm reliability focused, it reduces the potential for errors that can compound in production. Now, I'm not going to say that these paths are actually static. Developers can actually build up on the golden paths. They can either provide improvements to the golden paths, or they can just use components from the golden paths to pave their own path. The idea is to help the developers speed up their workflow. If I had to sum it up in one sentence, this is how I would put it. Golden paths within Backstage offer a consistent approach to launching services to production, meaning that they're more likely to be reliable in production. Remember I mentioned earlier that Spotify hit a very high growth in 2010, where its user count almost doubled in 2011. Throughout its growth journey, Spotify discovered that the cost of infrastructure often outpaced its revenue growth. Management was scrambling to find ways to curb cloud costs as they were continually rising. But being Spotify and being engineer first, they felt like they couldn't simply impose new cost controls from above. So they looked at the problem as an engineering problem. That's when Spotify's Insights Cost team devised a brilliant strategy that leveraged what developers already were using, the Backstage platform. They developed a plugin named Cost Insights that integrated directly within Backstage. The premise is simple. Engineers and their squads are made in charge of handling the costs associated with running their services. Sounds like a dream come true, but did this premise actually succeed? It did. It actually did. In this way, cost control becomes part of the engineering workflow rather than an afterthought that finance has to deal with and then penalize teams, and it gets very complicated. Instead, this is the better path. Involving engineers directly in the cost decision-making behind services helps Spotify cut its annual cloud spend by millions of dollars. I'm going to mention quickly some things that the developers did to control costs. It included what I would say is the best practice in cloud cost control, and that is labeling cloud provider resources to match your internal component and service names. This is much easier than relying on the report that you can generate from your cloud provider. The Cost Insights plugin also had an internal chargeback model to bill other teams. A lot of times a cloud account was jointly owned by multiple teams. According to Janisa Anandamohan of Spotify's cost engineering, engineers are natural optimizers. So it makes sense to give them the task to tweak the costs as yet another opportunity to optimize parameters within their service for the better. You might be wondering, why would engineers care about saving costs? It doesn't really add directly to their bottom line. But in a way it does, because they started to turn it into a competitive game. It was a matter of pride where they would show other peers how much money they've saved on cloud costs. The other thing was that engineers realized that savings made in the cloud would mean greater profits overall in the organization, which could support hiring new engineers. The good news for you, if you're not at Spotify, is that the Cost Insights plugin is open source, just like the entire Backstage portal. And like I mentioned in the article version of this, this is not a sponsored post. Spotify does not know I am doing this. I'm mentioning this because Spotify isn't the only organization I know that is dealing with high cloud costs. I have a conversation every week with at least one person about this. And the mood will only get bleaker as we migrate more workloads to the cloud, build more services there, and use more complex abstractions like serverless. So who is best placed to manage all of this and manage the costs that will come from all of this? Of course, engineers, as long as you're managing their workloads. Obviously, you don't add this if they're already overloaded with other things. It's better to take this lightly and go in slowly, especially if they're overloaded with other work. By now, you should have a very clear idea that Spotify embraces a culture of ongoing learning and improvement. SREs within their guild are encouraged to experiment with new technologies, share their learnings throughout the organization, and keep disseminating best practices. It does this in a few tangible ways. SREs actively participate in Spotify's Hack Weeks, one of which actually spawned the Backstage platform as an open source project. And I'm sure SREs are doing other currently top secret work on how they can improve the software operations at Spotify. The other area is retrospective. SREs actively involve themselves in retrospectives of all forms. Of course, they're going to be handling the retrospectives for looking at incidents, but they may also participate in retrospectives in terms of what agile squads are doing. This allows them to improve their abilities to do retrospectives or postmortems, whatever you may call them. This would actually help them with their own retrospectives when they're doing one on incidents. The other aspect that really works in the favor of SREs is peer feedback is encouraged. It's in fact a part of the workflow. Squads engage in regular feedback sessions where individuals, including SREs, can provide insights, suggestions, and observations to help their colleagues grow and improve. By now, you've experienced the masterpiece that is Spotify's site reliability engineering practice. It was born out of solving a real problem, which was the relentless growth of its user base and infrastructure. What makes all of this truly remarkable is how Spotify has used culture and driving practices as a means to improve the reliability of its services. What's even more remarkable is that they've codified these practices and actually have shared them with all of us to actually use in our organizations. Things like communities of practice, aka guilds, developer experience, like internal developer platforms, aka Backstage, and cost control measures. These practices are crucial and will be increasingly more crucial to the ongoing success of cloud computing. I cannot emphasize this enough, that the company's commitment to continuous improvement is the reason that it's been able to birth and continuously innovate on these practices, and it has reaped the rewards. That's all for my coverage of Spotify's SRE practices. If you enjoyed it, give it 5 stars on your podcast app. In the meantime, happy SRE.